I'm going to read today from Nehemiah chapter 2, and I'm going to endeavor to keep this to about 25 to 30 minutes today. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 1, and it came about in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, that wine was brought before him, and I, Nehemiah, picked up the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had not been sad in his presence. So the king said to me, "Why is your face sad, though you are not ill? This is nothing but sadness of heart." Then I was very much afraid. And I said to the king, "May the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the site of my father's tombs, is desolate and its gates have been consumed by fire?" Then the king said to me, "What would you request?" So I prayed to the God of heaven. Then I said to the king, "If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor before you, I request that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it." Then the king said to me, with the queen sitting beside him, "How long will your journey be, and when will you return?" So it pleased the king to send me, and I gave him a definite time. And I said to the king, "If it pleases the king, let letters be given me for the governors of the provinces beyond the river, so that they will allow me to pass through until I come to Judah. And a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, so that he will give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel, which is by the temple, for the wall of the city and for the house to which I will go." And the king granted them to me because the good hand of my God was on me. Then I came to the governors of the provinces beyond the Euphrates River and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent with me officers of the army and horsemen. And when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard about it, it was very displeasing to them that someone had come to seek the welfare of the sons of Israel. I want to preach today for the next 25 or 30 minutes. Evidence of faith. Evidence of faith. God bless you. You may be seated. Hebrews 11, 1 says this. Now, faith is the substance or the certainty of things hoped for, the evidence or the proof of things not seen. Hebrews 11:1 gives us a definition of faith, something that you are hoping for, something that you are believing for, even when you have not seen it and there is no evidence. Your faith is the certainty, and it is that certainty is the evidence. Hebrews 11:6 would tell us, "Without faith, it is impossible to please him," speaking of God, "for the one who comes to God must believe that he is and that he is the rewarder of those who diligently seek him." You got to believe that God exists. That's the first step of faith. If you don't believe God exists, nothing else is really going to matter. But if you believe that he exists, and then you believe that he is going to reward those who diligently seek him, then everything's going to be all right. I had a conversation last Sunday afternoon, and I was defining the difference between a theist, which is a person who believes in God, an atheist, which is a person who does not believe in God, and an agnostic, which is a person that says we can have no knowledge of God. That we can't really know if he exists or if he doesn't exist. We can't know anything about it. And what I pointed out in that conversation is this, that an agnostic is really making two claims. They're making a claim about themselves and saying, "I don't have the ability to know if there's a God." That's obvious in its word. And the name agnostic, it comes from the Greek word gnosis, which means knowledge, and a, which negates that, to mean have no knowledge. Agnostic, person who has no knowledge. We call them ignorant. That's what that really means, by the way. Lack of knowledge. But an agnostic is not only making a claim about themselves that they can't know, they're making a claim about the God they don't know if he exists or not. They don't know if he exists, but they're saying if he does exist, he cannot make himself known. That he is incapable of letting me know that he is there. He's incapable of communicating with me. He's incapable of passing on this information that he exists. So while it's a little better than atheism, which says there is no God, it's not much better, because they're saying if there is a God, he's kind of pitiful and doesn't have any power and he's kind of weak and he doesn't have the ability to speak to us humans. But the writer of Hebrews would say you got to believe that he exists. It's the foundation of faith to believe that God is, and not only that he is and not only that he exists, but he will reward those who diligently seek him. You're making a claim about this God that you say exists. He is going to reward me when I seek him. That if I go after him, he's going to make himself known to me. He's going to respond to me. He's going to be with me. He's going to help me when I seek him. The evidence of faith, the rest of Hebrews 11, it is the hall of faith. It is the faith chapter. It's all about the people who stepped out in faith and did great and mighty things for God. The writer will expound on many of these people. But when we think about people of faith, or maybe we think about people who were afraid to step out in faith, people like Gideon, who said, all right, I know this is God speaking, but just to be sure, I'm going to put my fleece out before the Lord. And the fleece, he's putting out the animal skin, and he says to God, here's what I want. I want everything to be dry in the dew of the morning and only the fleece that I put out to be wet. And when God comes through with that, he's like, well, let's try it a different way. Anybody could come and pour water on my animal skin, this fleece, and make it look like it was the dew of heaven. So how about this? Let everything else be wet and the fleece be dry, and then I will believe God. Afraid to step out, hearing the word of God, but not sure what he was going to do about it. Or Barak, who Deborah says, this is what God is saying to do, and he's like, I'm not doing it unless you go with me. I'm scared to go by myself. I'm not really sure God is going to be with me. But in both instances, these two men, they're also listed in the hall of faith, in the faith chapter. The writer would say it this way, what more shall I say? For time will fail me if I tell of Gideon, the Barak, and he lists others. Because ultimately, even though they were afraid to step out, even though they weren't sure that they wanted to step out, eventually they stepped out in faith and they did what God was calling them to do. They did what God was directing them to do. They stepped out in faith, even though they had this initial hesitation. Anybody ever been there? You feel like God is trying to lead you to do something. You're like, I don't know about this. I'm not sure that I want to do what I hear or I think God is saying to me. Well, I would just tell you, everybody goes through that at some time, but there's something that takes place and transforms you when you step out in faith and say, I'm just going to believe God. I'm just going to trust him to do what he has told me to do, and let whatever come, I'm putting my faith in the God of the universe. James would say it this way, faith without works is dead. If a man says he has faith but doesn't have works, he's just talking. Which means this, there has to be evidence of faith. There has to be something that you can look at that's beyond just, well, I believe. There has to be evidence. There has to be some action that accompanies your faith, some action that says, my faith is real. For instance, if you were to say, I believe that if I will give my life to Jesus, he will take me to live with him forever. And I want that to happen. But then you don't give your life to Jesus. Your faith without works is dead. It doesn't matter if you believe that truth or that fact. It doesn't matter that he died. You can believe all day long that he died on the cross for your sins. But unless you step out in faith and have that sacrifice of Jesus applied to your life, it's just words. James says he's just talking. If a man says he has faith but he doesn't have any action with it, he doesn't really have faith. So what do you do when pastor preaches, we're called to work for God? You don't know what you're supposed to do. You don't know how to do it. You want to work for God, but you don't know how to go about it. You're scared to step out when you feel God has given you a task or God has given you a direction. What do you do? How do you respond? What kind of evidence of faith can we have? What should we do when God speaks, and how should we respond to his direction? Nehemiah, these first 10 verses of chapter 2 gives us, I will not say it is the only evidence, but it is evidence of faith that will be applicable to you and I. And it came to pass in the month Nisan, the 20th year of King Artaxerxes. The first evidence of faith is this. Nehemiah had the patience to wait. I've just got done telling you that faith requires some action. And now I'm telling you, faith says at times you got to wait. Which is it? Is it wait? Is it act? The answer is yes. It's been 4 months since Nehemiah first received word from Jerusalem. 4 months since he talked to Hananiah, his brother, and asked him, tell me what's going on back in that great city. And for 4 months, Nehemiah was waiting. Waiting for the proper time, waiting for the next step, waiting for direction. If you're like me, when you hear that God wants you to do something, or you believe God wants you to do something, or you feel called to do something, you're ready to go right then and there. Anybody like that? Now, depending on what it is, if it's big, you may be like, I don't know about that. If it's going to be for your good, like, you know, you're going to get $1 million. Like, well, you know, I think that's right now. Let's do it. No waiting here. Even so, let it be. And Nehemiah, for 4 months, his faith says, I'm waiting on God because I'm waiting on the answer to the prayer that I prayed. I know it's coming. He had ended chapter 1. God grant your servant mercy before the king. He actually said before this man, he's speaking of the king, give me mercy, give me favor, give me blessing. I'm praying that whenever it's time, you're going to give me what I need in that moment, so I'm waiting on you. There is benefit to waiting. There's no benefit to waiting because you're scared. There's benefit to waiting when you're waiting on his timing. There's benefit to saying, God, I'm going to continue to do what I know to do until you tell me the next step. God, I want to do this work for you. I feel compelled and I'm praying and I'm fasting and I feel your direction and I want to do this from you, but I'm waiting on your timing. So 4 months, Nehemiah, he waits, but he continues to pray. Continues to fast. He continues doing his job. He doesn't quit his job. He doesn't say, well, man, God's going to send me to Jerusalem. I'm just going to kick back and wait. No, he does what he knows to do. God's direction is not always for immediate action. It's not just impulsive behavior. It's doing what you know to do until God gives you the next step. Abraham, he got ahead of God's timing with Hagar. God, you said you're going to make of me a great nation. My descendants are going to be like the sands of the sea. But you're not doing it quick enough, Lord. So let me take over and come up with what needs to happen. The children of Israel are paying for that decision by Abraham to this day. Getting ahead of God's timing is never a good idea. So sometimes faith says, I'm going to wait until the next step. I mentioned this in Sunday school. 25 years, July of 1993 to July of 2018, from the time my wife and I, we were dating, first talked about planting a church, till we moved here to Olathe to plant this church. Three different times, I tried to get ahead of God's timing. Three different times, I'm like, God, you want me to plant a church? I'm called to pastor. Let me kick in a door somewhere. If you're not opening the door, God, that means you just want me to run through this wall. That's biblical. Leap over a troop, run through a wall, or maybe it's leap over a wall and run through a troop. I don't know. But I was going to do it three different times. And then finally, doing work for God, full-time ministry for over 20 years, wasn't sitting around just waiting. I was busy doing what he was giving me along the way. But then at General Conference 2016, it was the first thing he said, now is the time to go. You mean it wasn't those three other times I tried to do it? No, that's why they didn't work out. Now is the time to go. Faith says, God, I know what you've spoken. Faith says, God, I'm going to wait on your timing. I'm going to wait on your next step. I'm going to wait on your direction. And once again, if you're just waiting because you're afraid, like, I know what I'm supposed to do, and God said do it, but I don't know about it. I'm just going to hold back. That's a different story. That's a different animal. But true faith says, I'm waiting on the next step. I'm not going to get ahead of the process and the plan of God. I'm going to wait until he gives me the right opportunity. And Nehemiah, who has gone about his vocation for 4 months, maybe the king hasn't paid attention before, or maybe Nehemiah has been able to hold it together before, but on this day, 4 months later, roughly the month of March for us, he's in the presence of the king. The king wants some wine. Nehemiah is the cupbearer. He brings the wine. He tasted, makes sure the king's not going to die of poison. And while he's going about his duty, the king says, got a sad countenance. You're not sick. You just got sorrow of heart. Maybe Nehemiah had held it together. I don't know. Maybe the king wasn't very observant. And on this particular day, he's like, the time's right. And God makes sure that he notices what's going on with Nehemiah. And he says, what is it? Well, why shouldn't I be sad? My people, they're in trouble back home. And Nehemiah, in that moment, when the king finally says, well, what is it that you want? Nehemiah prayed one more time. When the moment of truth came, he was waiting for this moment for 4 months. He waited until that right question. And the king says, what is it that you want? All right, God, And he doesn't go to his knees right then. He's had 4 months of prayer and fasting. And in that moment, he just probably doesn't even verbalize anything. The king would probably thought he's out of his mind. He just shoots a mental prayer to heaven. All right, God, this is it. Give me favor right now. What I've been praying for, all those thoughts I'm sure have been going through his head. And at the moment of truth, the next evidence of faith comes. And he has boldness to ask. Not only the patience to wait, but he has the boldness to ask. And then I said to the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor before you, I request that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it. He's been praying for 4 months for this one moment. Nehemiah doesn't get cold feet when the moment of truth finally arrives. Many of us, we would have those, when the moment finally comes, what is it that you want? Not having boldness, not having being too timid to actually ask. Anybody ever been in that situation? You've wanted something for a long time, and your boss finally opens the door and gives you an opportunity, and you're like, I'll just take a 50-cent raise. When you've been like, I've been praying for $10 an hour raise, and you're like, anybody? Nehemiah, his faith gives him the boldness to ask for what he believes God is calling him to do. This boldness came from 4 months of prayer. This boldness came from trusting in God. This boldness came from months of processing. This came from when he asked, I'm ready. When he asked, I'm gonna step out. I've got my sentence already and my question already. Let me go so I can rebuild it. I'm all ready. I'm just waiting on the moment. And he doesn't back down, and he doesn't get cold feet, and he doesn't get fearful and afraid. At least not too afraid to make the ask. It says, when the king says, what's wrong with you? You got this sad face. It's sadness of heart. He got a little fearful. But his fear did not overcome his faith, and he asked anyway. Sometimes what God directs us to do requires gaining permission. I know you think that when God says, this is what I want you to do, well, God said it, I don't need anybody else's permission. Yeah, you do. Nehemiah couldn't just say, I'm going to Jerusalem, I'm doing this. He's working through the process that God has given him. He's working through the chain of command. He's working through all of this. When God, 2016, when God says it's time to go, it took another 20 months, 21 months to get here. Why? There's a process. I'm in an organization. I can't just be like, forget y'all, I'm going to plant a church. They'd be like, forget you. You don't have a license with us. Do what you want. We don't care anymore. And you're not getting any money. There's a process. And sometimes it requires getting approval. It requires getting permission. Pastor, this is what God's wanting me to do. What do you think? Let's go through the process. This is what I want to do. Can I do it? I don't know if you're ready. It's that faith in the waiting. I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to quit. I'm just going to wait until the right timing. Faith requires not just sometimes these little asks, but the boldness to ask big things. I had the Lord tell me, and I don't use that a lot. I try to limit how, when I say God tells me something. Because, I mean, who's going to argue with that? Right? I mean, once you say God told me, it's like, okay. We believe you're a nut, or we have to do whatever it is you think God told you to tell. So I try to limit that. And I had a situation last February, maybe, and the Lord told me to go ask somebody for a certain amount of money, certain period of time. It was substantive. It's going to be $72,000 by the time all was said and done. And it wasn't somebody that was connected with our church. It wasn't somebody that believes what I believe. So when I met with them, I was like, I'm just going to tell you, normally I wouldn't do this. But the Lord told me to go do this and ask for this specific amount. I was like, oh, and I said, here's what I'm telling you. I'm not telling you have to do it. I'm just telling you this is what God told me to do. You do what you want. God confirmed it twice. That identical amount that I asked for, God gave it to them twice in the next 3 weeks. And then they decided that it wasn't God speaking. I did what I was supposed to do, but I got to tell you, I was a little uncomfortable making that particular ask. I've raised a lot of money from people on the phone, in person, for ministry, Gateway College, to get here. I had a really good week this week fundraising. I'm down to my last 35 partners that I need. Raised around $800 in monthly commitments for the next 60 months this past week. And I got to tell you, I mean, I prayed about this, but what really happened was my wife talked to somebody, and she and her husband prayed. I think she talked to the lady on Monday. And the last time I talked to this guy, he's like, yeah, my wife and I, we're going to do $100 a month to the Metro Missions deal. And he said, man, I'll be praying for you. And then, like, that next day, I had, like, the biggest day I'd had. I'm like, so I'm calling back up this week. Like, y'all need to pray some more this week. Because God seems to be answering their prayer. In fact, Anna said, man, why is God answering their prayer and not ours? I was like, he hears us. So I don't. But maybe if he just answers my prayer, I might get the big head, but look at what I'm doing. Instead of realizing that it's God that's really doing it. Ain't nobody giving because I'm awesome. Everybody's just giving because they love Jesus and they want to be a part of his kingdom. But it takes boldness to ask going through the process. Not only did he have the patience to wait and the boldness to ask, the third evidence of his faith was he had the diligence to plan. Diligence to plan. Now, if you can't remember all this, you can see all the big points on that QR code on the screen behind me. If you don't care, don't scan it, no big deal. Just listen and let the Lord talk to you. The king said to me, with the queen sitting beside him, how long will your journey be, and when will you return? So it pleased the king, and I gave him a definite time. He knew exactly what he was going to do. For 4 months, he'd not only been praying and waiting, but he had been planning. This is when I'm going to leave. This is how long it's going to take me to get there. This is how long I need to be there. This is when I would be back. He had it all laid out. But not only did he have the timeline figured out, but he said to the king, if it pleases the king, let letters be given me for the governors of the provinces beyond the river so they'll allow me to pass through. When I cross over the river, they're not going to be too happy to see me, so give me letters, because they don't know who I am, king, but they know who you are, so you give me a letter so I can get to my destination. And then give me a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, so he'll give me timbers to make beams for the gates of the citadel, which is by the temple. I'm going to need some materials. I'm going to need some stuff. So, king, I've got it all. Here's the list of letters. I've been working on this for 4 months and coming up with all the plans that I need. Here's the letters I need. Here's who they need to be for. And here's what all the materials I need, king. Give it to me. Faith said it would happen, so he planned. Faith said, if it's going to happen, you need to know all the possibilities. Faith says, I need to prepare for when God says it's time for me to go. I'm ready to go. I'm not waiting on God to say, now it's time. Except we can't go because you haven't prepared. I've been preparing because I heard a voice from God to say, this is what you're going to do. So I'm just waiting on the moment, but I'm also planning and preparing for when that moment arrives. And he has a detailed plan with time and the protection that he needs and the process that he needs to go through and all the materials he's been planning. Faith says it's going to happen, so this is what I'm doing in anticipation of the moment. Faith is not passively just sitting by waiting on God to pick you up and put you somewhere else. Faith says, this is what you've called me to do. I'm getting ready. If it's not time to start, I'm getting everything I need in order. So when the time comes, I'm ready to go. And if I could talk about myself one more time, that night when God said it's time to go and he gave me the vehicle, he said Metro Missions is the vehicle. I'd had previous North American missions director try to get me to go on Metro Missions, and I told him, I said, I'm not going, I'm not deputizing. And for those of you who don't know, deputizing means you go travel around the country preaching, and you live off your offerings, and you get people to partner with you for like 2 years. I was like, I ain't doing that. Now, if God had told me to do that, I would have done it. But if God ain't speaking, I ain't doing it. And that's good Louisiana vernacular. I ain't doing it. What you're not going to do is have me go on deputy. Those of you that know good Southern vernacular. But when he said, now's the time to go, this is the vehicle, here's the third thing he said. Some of you could quote this by now. You can use your gateway experience to shorten the process. And I knew what he meant because while I was executive vice president of Gateway, I was raising money. It was my primary job to keep the college afloat, raising money. And I knew, he said, that had prepared me for this moment. I was scheduled to go on deputation. And understand, look, I can make the ask. But at the end of the day, and I realize this, and maybe God has taught me this on this second time through. See there? Told you he's teaching me a lesson. Static buildup. Here's what I think he's taught me, that at the end of the day, even though I'm using my mouth and I'm making the ask, it's God who's given the favor. It's God who's the one that's preparing hearts. I don't think I've had a single callback on Saturday since I've been raising money. And I don't make any outbound calls on Saturday. Yesterday, I get three people respond back to me, and all three of those partner with us. But at the end of the day, it's not look at what I've done, it's look at what the Lord has done. God is the one who's working it out. God is the one who's got the timeline in his hand. God is the one who's preparing all of this. And lastly, as Anna comes to the piano, not only had the patience to wait, the boldness to ask, the diligence to plan, but he had the courage to go. The king said yes. The king gave Nehemiah everything that he wanted. Verse 9, then I came to the governors of the provinces beyond the Euphrates River and gave them the king's letters just as I had asked from him. But in addition, the king had sent officers of the army and horsemen. He has a whole entourage of people that the king sends with him just so he doesn't show up with just a letter. It's dangerous on the other side of the Euphrates River. you might need some protection to go with you, but he had the favor of the king. But then Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official, when they heard about it, they weren't real happy with what Nehemiah was doing. They weren't happy with God's plan. They weren't happy that Nehemiah had come to rebuild God's city. They weren't happy that Nehemiah had come to rebuild the gates and the walls of the city of Jerusalem. Calling doesn't mean absence of obstacles and opposition. Approval doesn't mean absences or the absence of problems. It doesn't mean everything's going to be easy. If everything was easy, all you have to do then is just make the bold ask. But the call of God isn't without its sacrifice. The call of God isn't without its difficulties. It's not without its ups and downs. Nehemiah faced the difficulty and distance of the trip, hundreds and maybe even close to thousands of miles. When God calls you, he's not calling you to a vacation. He's calling you to work. When he calls you, it's not to a retirement plan to take your ease in Zion. When he calls you, it's to be active and to do something in his kingdom. When he calls you, it's, here's the plans and the tasks that I have for you. But here's what it does mean. It doesn't mean absence of problems. But when God calls, it does mean that God will be with you. It does mean that God will help you. It does mean that God is going to provide for you and he's going to take care of you. You may go through difficult circumstances and difficult trials, but he has promised that he will be with you. If he calls you, he will be there. The displeasure of the enemy. Enemy's not happy. We have an adversary who's not happy when we do the will of God, who's going to do everything they can to stir up trouble and strife, to stir up difficulty and to keep you and to cause you to want to quit. But faith says, I'm going to keep on. Faith says, I'm going. It doesn't matter who's happy and who's not. If God's happy, then I'm going to continue to do what he has called me to do, regardless of what others think. Because the only thing that matters is God pleased. So when God speaks, got to step out and do his will. I don't misunderstand what I'm going to say, and I don't want everybody to, I don't think that you would, but don't come to me or let me hear next week that you quit your job because of what I'm going to say. That's that patience to wait piece. God has, I've got personal experience with this, and I've heard numerous stories where God says, you need to quit your job and you need to go do this and trust me. How am I going to live? Just trust me, I'll take care of it. It doesn't mean you'll never work again. It just means it's not going to be there. He's going to provide a different way and a different job and a different place and a different means. Lord, I don't know if I can trust you. I don't know if it's really you. I don't know what will happen. Sometimes we have to just, God, I know it's you. So I'm going to do what you're telling me. Would you stand together with me? Sometimes God tells you things like, go across the restaurant and tell this person about Jesus, or go across the restaurant and ask if you can pray for them. You mean in a crowded restaurant with people everywhere? Yeah, that's what I mean. Surely that's not the voice of the Lord. Yeah, surely it is. Because you're not going to call yourself to do that because you don't want to do it. And the enemy's not going to call you to do that because he doesn't want you to do it. So whether it's sharing your faith or it's praying for someone, or it may not be that big thing like Nehemiah. Nehemiah, you're going to take a 2,000-mile journey. You're going to go back. You're going to face opposition and the enemy, but you're going to lead the people into rebuilding the walls of the city. You're going to be governor for 12 years. It doesn't matter how big it is. It just matters whether we respond in faith to what he says, which could simply be just walking across the room in obedience to God. It could even be as simple as, Lord, your word says that I need to tithe, but I need all the money. I can barely get by. I can barely scrape by. It's trusting that God will do what he says he will do. Cesar, it's just like even before you received the Holy Ghost, when God spoke to you and said, what are you waiting for? Let's go ahead and do it. He's starting that job he's been praying for a long time. He's starting on Tuesday. Almost double the money. Faithfully giving. And he had said, and he said it in his testimony, I will wait till I get the job, but then I'll start it. But God said, what are you waiting on? Do it now. But Lord, I don't know that we can make it. I don't know that we can get by. If he said it, he'll take care of you. You just got to do what it is that he's calling you to do. Faith isn't always easy, but faith is an action verb. Yeah, I know it's a noun. Faith can be a thing, but faith is an action. If a man says he has faith, but he has not works, he doesn't really have faith. You got to put it in action with your faith. I don't know what God's calling you to do. I know in general what God is calling all of you to do, in one sense. But the specific calling that he has for your life, I don't know. In the right time, God will let you know, and he'll let me know if you're here at part of this church. But I would just tell you, don't wait till he speaks. If he hasn't spoken, don't wait till he speaks to decide that you'll trust him. You can do it now. You can say, God, I'm putting my faith in you now. I'm just waiting on a word. I'm just waiting on direction. I'm just waiting on you to speak to me. I'm waiting on you just to drop a thought in my heart that I know is from you, and then I'm going to do it, whatever it is you've called me to do. If that's your desire, if that's your heartbeat today, I'm going to invite all of you to step out from where you are. Would you come and just spend a couple of moments around the front of this building saying, God, I'm surrendering everything to you, and I'm willing and I'm ready to step out when you call. Lord, for some, you've already spoken a word, and they're ready to step out. For others, they're just saying, God, I'm just waiting on a word from you. I'm waiting on clear direction for what you want me to do, and then I'm going to step out. God, but we want to show and display the evidence of our faith, waiting patiently until your next step, but planning, living in courage,
as it's written.